Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor's agenda with Biden in the White House. Stimulus number one, PRO Act to follow. Postal workers planning a day of action tomorrow. And today on the show, the United Mine Workers and the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, November 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, as well as Google Podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at AWF Union Podcast. Two guests on the show today. Phil Smith is going to be joining us. Been a while since he's been on the show. Phil is the Director of Government Affairs for the United Mine Workers, a position that he's had since July of 2014, but he's been with the mine workers for quite some time. Prior to that, he served as the Director of Communications for almost a decade. In addition to UMWA members and their families, he's worked to help improve the lives of a wide variety of working families throughout the country, as well as Canada, consulting with unions representing hospital, healthcare workers, steel workers, aluminum workers, copper miners, public employees, teachers, postal workers, flight attendants, you name it. Phil has developed and implemented multiple strategic communications campaigns, all in support of labor union objectives for organizing, collective bargaining, work stoppages, issue advocacy. He also developed some strategies and executed for the Steelworkers campaign at Wheeling Pittsburgh Steel. We're going back to 1990. Also, the Mine Workers Fairness at Patriot Coal effort. That was in 2012 to 2013, which helped those unions win collective bargaining agreements, which were significant improvements over what the judge ordered in bankruptcy court. And you know that. My gosh, when it gets to bankruptcy court, the workers are usually the last ones considered. And Phil did everything to make it the best possible for them. As government affairs director for the mine workers, he developed and implemented a broad legislative and communication strategy to achieve congressional passage of legislation going back 3 years ago, preserving the health care benefits of over 22,000 retired miners, dependents, and widows whose benefits were threatened due to a series of coal industry bankruptcies. And then last year, legislation safeguarding promised pension benefits for 92,000 current and future retired coal miners and widows. This guy is pretty much working around the clock. He's going to talk about what he has done and also the bankruptcies. Apparently, there's another one here, Remington Arms. I'm going to talk about that. The owners terminated all but 22 workers out of 600 at the plant. Cut off health care, refused to pay contractual obligations for severance and vacation. How many times has that happened in America, right? So Phil Smith's going to be our first guest. Andrew Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, will be joining us. He's going to give us an update on the bill to replace House Bill 6. That's the bill that was signed into law in July of 2019, providing more than $1 billion in subsidies for two nuclear power plants in Ohio that were owned by First Energy Solutions. The subsidies would also support two 66-year-old coal power fire plants, with one located in Ohio, another in Indiana. Kind of controversial. It did have labor support because of all the jobs. I want to say maybe 4,500 to 5,000 jobs would be preserved. But apparently some shenanigans happened. The Speaker of the House and a number of other people were indicted because the FBI came in, and that case is still pending. So a lot of people are upset with the passage of House Bill 6. So there's a new piece of legislation, 772, that we're going to talk about. Depending on time, too, We'll get into energy choice as we get into the winter months here. So Andy Tinkham will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Congressional passage of the Protect the Right to Organize, or PRO Act, the most pro-worker rewrite of U.S. labor laws since 1935, is high among Joe Biden's economic priorities, assuming he takes office on January 20th. We just don't know what's going to happen with this Trump administration. But anyway, Rich Trumka, who heads the AFL-CIO, is applauding that with one caveat. He wants that to be number two. And the only reason it's second is that Trumka, thinking of the entire country as well as the benefits to workers, wants lawmakers to approve the HEROES Act first. This is what he said. The Biden-Harris administration will rebuild the middle class and this time make sure everyone comes along. And carrying out his economic pledge to build it back better, Biden added, that means an updated social contract that treats American workers and working families as essential at all times, not just times of crisis, with higher wages, stronger benefits, as well as fair and safe workplaces. Let's not just praise them, let's pay them, Biden said of essential workers, adding they deserve a decent wage of at least $15 per hour. And ending the tip minimum wage and sub-minimum wage for people with disabilities and strong benefits so they can live a middle-class life. And when that happens, you provide opportunity for your kids. He went on to say this starts with passing the PRO Act, providing public service and federal workers with bargaining rights and taking other steps to make it easier for workers to organize unions and collectively bargain. The PRO Act would remove many of the roadblocks the courts, the National Labor Relations Board, and corporate criminals have used for more than 70 years to destroy unions and reduce workers to serfdom. It would also ban captive audience meetings and other coercion, impose hefty fines and court orders on labor law breakers, making unionizing easier to achieve and mandate arbitration when workers and bosses just can't agree on a first contract. And on top of it, Biden has said this on the campaign trail. He said he wants to send chronic corporate labor law breaking executives to jail. Wouldn't that be something? You know there's going to be a big fight on this one. Big fight on this one. Well, Rich Trumka praised the top priorities, but he said, you know what? This has to be number two because workers need help. They need help. After the HEROES Act, which unions have lobbied for long and hard ever since the Democratic-run House approved it twice months ago, comes the PRO Act, Trumka says. After all, the HEROES Act provides emergency relief, but it's just that, relief. Once working people are made whole, the real rebuilding can begin. We call on Congress to pass and Biden to sign the PRO Act early next year to make sure every worker who wants to form or join a union is able to do so freely as well as fairly. So, there you have it. Priority is help for workers first, and then we'll get into the PRO Act. Meanwhile, the 2020 election may be officially over, but Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's plan to destroy the Postal Service are not. And the postal workers are leading a wide-ranging national coalition setting up events tomorrow to stop him. The union announced its plans in a video teleconference nationwide last week, urging viewers and their allies to stage pro-postal service rallies, including virtual rallies at post offices nationwide. And if you can't make it to the rally, or even if you can, call Congress, said Mark Diamonstein. Mark is head of the Postal Workers Union. Here's the number. You might want to jot this down. 833-924-0085. And I'll repeat that today as well as tomorrow. 833-924-0085. At stake, he explained, is DeJoy's scheme shelved due to public pressure in months before the election to rip out sorting machines, fire thousands of postal workers, most of whom are unionized, people of color, female, veterans, or combinations of what I just said, and then slow down the delivery of everything from medicines to Social Security checks. Now, DeJoy made those moves, though Diamonstein did not say so, at the behest of Donald Trump. The coronavirus pandemic sweeping the country made mail-in ballots needed. Trump feared the mail-in ballots would encourage higher turnout and sweep them out. And I guess apparently that happened. Also at stake, Diamonstein said, is to stop once and for all the right-wing plan backed by corporate mailers to carve up the Postal Service, sell it off to places like FedEx and UPS. Our opponents are moving in for the kill, he said, and exploiting this pandemic with shameful cuts to services and then sell it off and privatize it. DeJoy is a big Republican donor handpicked by Donald Trump. His actions led to a public uproar and lawsuits by a number of postal unions. There's actually four of them. They culminated in DeJoy's retreat, at least temporarily, plus daily oversight of the Postal Service's operations. DeJoy made it clear his retreat was only temporary. The events tomorrow, said Diamonstein, aim to show public support not just for permanently repealing DeJoy's disastrous agenda, but for positive moves to put the Postal Service back on its financial feet. The positive moves include $25 billion in the HEROES Act to ensure continued Postal Service at old standards and make up for losses caused by the pandemic. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, of course, refusing to allow debate or votes on either version of the HEROES Act, plus the $25 billion for the Postal Service. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce, our segment with the mine workers coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and you can receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. By the way, this first segment on the show, actually our second segment, first segment with a guest, and that's Phil Smith. This goes to the United Labor Agency. You can find them online at ulagency.org. So let's go to the live line right now and welcome this gentleman back to the show. It's been years. Phil is with the United Mine Workers. He's Director of Government Affairs, and he's here to talk about the coal industry and a whole lot more and bankruptcies. Boy, a lot has changed in that industry and not for the good. Hey, Phil, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Oh, happy to be with you.
All right. Trump said 4 years ago that all the coal jobs were coming back. I'd just like to hear what the mine workers have to say about that. What's the status of the coal industry right now, Phil?
Well, it's worse than it was 4 years ago. There's no question about that. We're continuing to see coal-fired power plants close, which obviously impacts how much coal is being mined. If you're not burning coal to generate electricity, you're not burning coal. So we've seen a loss of probably another 3,000 to 4,000 workers in the coal industry, in the part of the coal industry that supplies coal to electricity generation. It's been greater than that. The only reason it hasn't been super bad for the entire industry is that the part of the industry that supplies metallurgical grade coal, which is what's used to generate steel, is actually held its own and actually come up a little bit over the past few years. But that's really only about 20% of the marketplace. The rest of the marketplace is thermal coal that's used to generate electricity, and that's in bad shape and getting worse.
So what happened to clean coal? I remember some years ago that they have these scrubbers and it was going to make it cleaner. Did that just go by the wayside? And probably part of your answer, too, you got competition with fracking and natural gas now. I guess that hasn't helped the coal industry. But let's start with the clean coal. What happened there, Phil?
Well, the concept of clean coal is really based around a technology called carbon capture and storage. What that does is capture the carbon gas that is created when you burn coal and compresses it and sequesters it deep underground. That technology exists. It is being used in Canada right now, for example, at a coal-fired power plant that's fed by UMWA Mine Coal, I might point out. And it's capturing about 80% of the carbon emissions that would normally come out of that power plant, which is obviously a huge change in what's emitted into the atmosphere. The problem that we've had in the United States with getting that deployed onto coal-fired power plants, there are some areas where it's being used to enhance oil recovery, but is that the government for the last 4 years, and frankly for the 4 years before that, really didn't do anything in terms of pumping the kind of money we need into that technology development to make it viable on a commercial scale. This is going to be an expensive process, the first three or four plants like that they build, and the only entity that has the kind of resources to help push this along is the federal government. The utilities don't want to do that. They don't have the resources to do that. The cost of the ratepayers would be prohibitive. So this is something that needs the federal government's intervention to take off. And frankly, neither the Obama administration nor the Trump administration were pretty keen to do that. Here's the problem, though. If you don't do that, you're not going to solve greenhouse gas emissions worldwide, because there are hundreds of coal plants that have been built all over the world and are under construction right now all over the world that do not have this technology. And they far outpace the amount of megawatts that's generated here in the United States without this technology. So let's say we shut down all coal-fired power in the next 15 years in this country. If you're not applying this technology globally, you're not doing a thing to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions. So the notion of, quote, clean coal, unquote, technology, that really isn't clean coal technology. It's carbon-free technology, and I think that's how we need to be looking at it. And that technology is feasible. We just need the resources to get out there and make it work.
So you're essentially saying that the United States is way behind the rest of the world when it comes to expanding coal-fired plants. I know China is doing everything that they can. I don't know about the rest of the world, but it seems like the environmentalists, I can only imagine, have kind of seized this and are trying to shut down the industry. Is that essentially what's happened here, Phil?
Well, two things are at work. Yes, there's the environmental movement is obviously very opposed to coal-fired generation, and they have succeeded in getting us to the point that there are no new coal-fired power plants being built in this country as we speak. Mm-hmm. But as I said, there are hundreds of them being built globally. And the Chinese are driving that technology. They're driving that construction throughout the world, both in China and elsewhere in Africa, elsewhere in Asia. If we're going to get a handle on global greenhouse gas emissions, we can't just focus on the United States, and we're going to have to use a expansion of technology to do that, and not just say shut everything down and leave it on the ground. That, at the end of the day, isn't going to work.
Anything from the Biden administration? I mean, I'm sure you reviewed the platform there, and
sure.
I'm just wondering what you see in the future under the Biden-Harris administration with regard to coal.
Well, the Biden administration actually in their campaign materials and in what they've said since then are supporters of carbon capture and sequestration. They want to invest money into that technology. They want to see that work. And not just for coal, but also for natural gas plants, for industrial uses. Let's not forget that places like steel mills and aluminum mills and other places, they're large industrial sources, also emit greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. So if we want to have any sort of industrial base in this country again, we're going to need to develop this for them to use as well. So the Biden administration does have plans and interest in developing this technology and moving along quicker than it has been in the past, because they recognize that it's not just a source of jobs, but it's also an actual way to address greenhouse gas emissions in a way that is less intrusive on the economy. So, we'll see where we go from there. There's obviously, in order to deal with this on the scale that it needs to be dealt with, it's going to require billions of dollars in investment from the federal mm-hmm. government. And right now, what we've been talking about under the current congressional makeup is hundreds of millions of dollars. So the what's being spent now is really just a drop in the bucket of what's needed.
Well, you have a lot of contact, obviously, with members of Congress, the House and the Senate. I'm just wondering how the future is going to pan out on this. I know there's a lot of lobbying at stake. There's some lawmakers that are pro-coal. There's a lot of lawmakers that are not. The bottom line is, there is a demand for energy. You know, our population is growing, and the presenting sponsor of this podcast and radio broadcast is Labor's International Union of North America, Terry O'Sullivan. I'm sure you know him. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know what? Mm-hmm. We want it all. We want nuclear power. We want coal. We want natural gas because we need it. We need it. And I'm just wondering, Phil, do some members of Congress don't realize that? I mean, do they have their head in the sand on this or what?
Well, some members of Congress don't. They are convinced that we'll be able to provide the baseload power in this country based on renewable energy alone. I think should we ever get to that point, we're not there yet. Let's put it that way. And so to go around and close coal-fired power plants, to close gas-fired plants, to close nuclear plants, really is kind of cutting off our nose to spite our face, because we're already seeing in places like California that have had reductions in what the kind of electricity that they generate. We're seeing rolling blackouts. We're seeing brownouts. We're seeing them in other places that have had extreme heat or cold events. And this is the future if we're not careful. So, as a representative of coal miners, I'm not going to sit here and advocate for nuclear energy. I'll tell you that. But the point of the fact is that without the kind of baseload power that those kind of plants can generate on a consistent basis, no matter what the weather is, no matter what the water flow is, no matter how much the wind blows, that power is always there. To just unplug it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, I will say there are members of Congress, including members who are pretty strong environmental advocates, who support carbon capture and storage, because they recognize, just as the United Nations Environmental Organization does as well, that you're not going to get a handle on global greenhouse gas emissions if you don't develop and deploy on a worldwide commercial basis this technology. guys like Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island, who is one of the strongest environmental advocates in the United States Senate, signed on to legislation with Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia to incentivize utilities to use this technology. So I think the focus is there, the support is there within the large segments of Congress to move this technology forward. Now we just need the commitment of the resources to do it.
Phil, I got to take a break. Phil Smith is with the United Mine Workers of America. He's going to be with us for another segment, talk about the Remington Arms bankruptcy. Also, later in the show, Andy Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, will be joining us. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, OFT-AFT.org is their website. By the way, Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, will be joining us tomorrow. Right now, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Phil Smith. Phil is the Government Affairs Director for the United Mine Workers of America. Boy, I tell you, there's been a lot of coal mining bankruptcies over the years. And now, Remington Arms, maker of weapons, filing for bankruptcy. What's the story there? What's the connection to you here, Phil? I need some explaining on this one.
Sure. Well, you know, the UOWA represents coal miners. We are the largest union representing coal miners in North America, but we also represent thousands of other workers. We represent manufacturing workers like the Remington Arms workers are. We represent healthcare workers. We represent public employees. We represent police officers. We represent corrections officers. And we're a very diverse union, and I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of all the people who we represent, no matter what industry they work in. But we've been representing the workers at the Remington Arms factory in Ilion, New York, since 1996, when they voted to join our union, and have, you know, negotiated collective bargaining agreement after collective bargaining agreement at that facility. Remington has actually expanded, and they moved part of their production down to Alabama, frankly, as far as we're concerned, to get away from the union contract. We worked on organizing the workers down there in the Alabama plant, but the fact is they, you know, Remington engaged in a lot of the same things that other employers do in terms of worker intimidation and other tactics that made it difficult to organize down there. And eventually we were unsuccessful in our efforts down there. But frankly, because of that move and the amount of money that it cost the company to do that and a few other boneheaded business decisions, Remington Arms filed for bankruptcy earlier this year. Now, let's remember, this is at a time when weapon sales are up in this country. You know, it's hard to figure out how smart business people can make decisions that would cause a firearms manufacturer to go into bankruptcy. But nevertheless, they did. And they want to move this bankruptcy along very, very quickly. So compared to others. They cut, essentially what they did during this process is break up the company and sell it off into parts. So the ammunition part of their business got sold to Sturm Ruger. The other parts of the business, the Marlin line, for example, which is a long time, you know, sporting rifle line, got sold to somebody else. So, but there was a successful bidder. We were concerned for a while that they were going to just shut the Ilion plant down entirely because it's an old plant. It's been there, you know, for 100 or more years. And needs some work. There's no question about that. But they were able to find a bidder for that plant. We held preliminary discussions with that bidder, encouraged them to take the plant, and they did. So there's now the plant has now been sold, although the sale has not been finalized, to a new bidder. But in the meantime, the old Remington management decided that what it needed to do was terminate all the current employees there, which of course cut off their health care for many of them right in the middle of a series of treatments that they were having or, prescription drug courses that they needed to have. Now they're not covered anymore with health care coverage. But the other thing they did was to deny payment of the severance pay and the accrued vacation pay that these workers had earned and which were provided for in our collective bargaining agreement. We should point out that the collective bargaining agreement still exists. It has not been terminated by a bankruptcy court, so that they are still obligated to live up to those provisions of the contract, and they are not. So, you know, each individual member of ours at the Remington plant in Ilion is losing anywhere from $7,000 or $8,000 to, in some cases, over $25,000 that they should be owed, that they are owed, and they should be paid in severance pay. So this is obviously a big problem. We filed with the National Labor Relations Board for an unfair labor practice. Congressman Anthony Brindisi, who is the representative there, has sent a letter to the NLRB saying this needs to be investigated. Chuck Schumer, who is a senator from New York, as everyone knows, has also sent a similar letter, and the NLRB is investigating for a violation of the law here. So we think we're on good legal grounds with what's going on there. It's just a question of how fast can we make this work and how fast can we make these workers whole. But this points up to the issues that workers have that we've seen a lot of, unfortunately, in the coal industry, but elsewhere, of how bankruptcy laws in America are skewed, seriously skewed, against workers and for people with money. It's really a travesty what goes on in this country. Workers are last with respect to what they are owed in the lineup for who gets what out of bankruptcies, and the bankers and the Wall Street investors are first. Right. They always get their money. And by the way, generally speaking, the managers that drove this company into the ground that caused it to go bankrupt end up getting a bonus, so they'll stick around. Sure. It's an awful way to treat people, but that's what we do in the United States.
And it wasn't always like that. I know they changed the bankruptcy laws some years ago in favor of the people you're talking about. But you've had some success. I was reading in your bio earlier about Patriot Coal. And apparently now was that there was a bankruptcy case where the workers were left hanging, but you made it better. Can you share what you did back then?
Sure. The power of solidarity is an awesome power when it's used together. One of the things that we did at Patriot Coal, President Roberts determined that his motto here is If you never give up the fight, the only question isn't if you'll win, it's when you'll win. He determined that we were going to start putting people in front of Peabody Energy's headquarters in St. Louis. Peabody was the spun off Patriot Coal into a separate entity a few years before that, and then Patriot went bankrupt. And we were going to demand that that Peabody do something to fix this problem that it from our perspective, it created. So every 2 weeks, we put 500 and then 800 and then 1,000 and then 2,000 and then 4,000 and then 6,000 and then 10,000 people in front of Peabody's headquarters in downtown St. Louis every 2 weeks. We marched around the city, marched from the bankruptcy court to Peabody's headquarters from February to September of 2013. We initiated a pretty strong communications campaign, both in St. Louis, but throughout the country as well. And not just in St. Louis, we marched in Charleston, West Virginia. We marched in Fairmont, West Virginia. We marched in right outside of, in Henderson, Kentucky. And at the end of the day, Peabody, Arch Coal, which was also involved in this, but primarily Peabody, paid the UNWA $400 million to go away. And we were able to use that money to set up a healthcare fund, a VEBA fund, to pay retirees' healthcare for the next 3 years until Congress passed legislation in 2017 that secured those retirees' healthcare forever. And that was really the fight. We were going to have, tens of thousands of retirees who are going to lose their health care if we didn't do something, if we didn't take on that fight. And one of the things about, every union understands the power of solidarity. But one of the things that is, in my mind, kind of unique about the United Mine Workers is they have always practiced that. They have always been willing to go into the streets when they have to. And fight for what they need, and that continues today. And that's power solidarity, and the idea that we weren't going to quit until we won is what won us, won those retirees their health care benefits. It was truly an amazing thing to watch.
I like what you said. $400 million they paid to have you go away.
Pretty much. It's interesting how things come together. Some people may recall that the Cardinals were in the World Series in 2013, and where we were marching and rallying was about a block away from the baseball park in downtown St. Louis. And I think Peabody recognized that with the rush of national and international visitors who would be coming to St. Louis, the last thing they needed was a couple thousand people clad in camo walking around the ballpark handing out leaflets and talking about what bad actors they were. So I think that may have had something to do with it as well.
Yeah, what's the old line? It's all in the timing. You know that.
That's right.
Okay, I got one more question here before you go. This Remington case, you appealed this to the National Labor Relations Board. That part scares me right now because of the makeup of the NLRB. I know that's going to change eventually with the new president, but going forward, how do you feel about this?
Well, look, frankly, we need for action to occur there fairly quickly. And, at the NLRB, that could be an issue, frankly. We hope that the new owner will take possession of this property within the next 2 to 2.5 months and start putting people back to work. Right now, the plant is closed. Nobody's getting any, nobody's making any money there. Except for a few people who are in there as maintenance people, just trying to, make sure it doesn't just fall apart. So our hope is that that the old Remington management, either through pressure at the NLRB or the bankruptcy court that we can bring to bear, we'll do the right thing and pay these folks what they're owed. And in the meantime, we're working with the new owners, who frankly are not responsible for this. They did not sign the collective bargaining agreement that included that language, and we understand that. We're working with them to try and get this plant open again as soon as possible. So it's kind of a two-track system there. our pressure points on old Remington management are really more public persuasion, shall we say. and hoping that they will end up doing the right thing. At the same time, trying to get this plant open so people can go back to work as soon as possible.
Do the right thing. All right, we'll leave it on that note. Phil, you're an awesome guest. Thank you for all that you've done for organized labor, and especially on behalf of the United Mine Workers, very diverse union today, umwa.org. And on Facebook, it's UMWA Union. You might want to check them out there. Hey, let's keep in touch on this issue. Good luck to you and all the mine workers, and have a safe journey through this pandemic, okay?
Oh, thank you very much, and you too, and all your listeners. Stay safe. Wearing a mask really does make a difference. Everybody, please keep that in mind.
Okay. Okay, Phil. Thanks for joining us today. Phil Smith, on behalf of the United Mine Workers. We're going to take a quick break. Andy Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, coming up next. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, or follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, Andy Tinkham. He is with the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. You can find them online at occ.ohio.gov. He's here to talk about House Bill 772, which would repeal and replace House Bill 6. Very controversial piece of legislation that got a lot of national attention because the FBI staged a raid and arrested the then Speaker of the House along with five or six other individuals who a couple of weeks ago got reelected, even though he was under FBI indictment. Politics, strange area, no doubt about that. Mr. Tinkham, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks again for having the ACC on your show.
Okay, where do we stand with this legislation? Because this is $1 billion in subsidies for two nuclear power plants and also a coal plant. What's the status here, Andrew?
Yeah, there have been some developments on the efforts to repeal House Bill 6, which passed last year. House Bill 6, which was signed into law in July 2019, it provided more than $1 billion in subsidies for two nuclear power plants in Ohio that were owned by First Energy Solutions, which went through a bankruptcy and is now Energy Harbor. The subsidies would have also provided subsidies to two 66-year-old uneconomical coal power fire plants and also six new solar farm installations. House Bill 6 also contained a lesser-known decoupling subsidy that would have also benefited First Energy. Now, earlier this year, as you were talking about, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio filed a criminal complaint against former Ohio House Speaker and his associates, alleging that they received $60 million from Company A in exchange for helping to pass House Bill 6. And Company A is widely known to be First Energy. Now, shortly after the criminal complaint was revealed, three repeal bills were introduced. That was House Bill 738, House Bill 746, and Senate Bill 346. In response to these repeal bills, Speaker Cupp created the House Select Committee on Energy Policy and Oversight to review House Bill 6 and hear House Bill 738 and House Bill 746 repeal bills. And they've been doing this late summer into the fall going into the election. Now, last week, after we got through the election, now we're in lame duck session, which will go through the end of 2020. And so last week, the Senate Energy and Public Utilities Commission, or committee, had a third hearing on Senate Bill 346, and they're going to have a fourth hearing on that bill tomorrow. Now, recently, Representative Romanchuk introduced House Bill 772 that would repeal and replace House Bill 6. Now, the OCC does support House Bill 772 and recommends its prompt passage to partially repeal the tainted House Bill 6. Now, House Bill 772, it's a pro-consumer legislation that, among other things, would stop the nuclear plant subsidy, the coal plant subsidy, and the decoupling subsidy. And then further, House Bill 772 would provide for refunds of these subsidy charges paid by Ohioans under tainted House Bill 6. Now, residential electric customers started paying $1.50 a month on the coal power plants on January 1st of 2020. Now, with the nuclear subsidy, which would be around 85 cents a month, is currently scheduled to start to appear on residential bills on January 1st of 2021. Now, also, House Bill 772 would keep the provision in House Bill 6 to sunset the energy efficiency and renewable energy standards. So under House Bill 772, those would not come back. OCC supports the competitive market for providing customers energy efficiency, but we don't like the government-mandated programs conducted by utilities where utilities reap profits from offering these energy efficiency programs. Certainly, the OCC is urging the Ohio General Assembly to repeal tainted House Bill 6 now by passing House Bill 772. Once again, at this time, House Bill 772, it has not received a hearing in the House, but certainly Speaker Cupp has stated his desire to address House Bill 6. But like I said, House Bill 772 did get a hearing last week in the Senate Energy and Public Utilities Committee, and it's scheduled to have a fourth hearing, once again, I said, tomorrow. But we'll see what happens. These bills would have to be passed by the end of the year in order to overturn House Bill 6. Certainly, I can keep you posted where we're at in December.
So if it doesn't happen this year, I'm sure they'll carry it into next year. Here's my concern, Andrew. The nuclear power plants, I know they employ, I believe, all together, and there's reciprocal jobs as a result of this, like about 4,000 individuals. And I know they're pretty decent jobs there. Are they going to close completely if they move forward with this and stop the subsidies? Is that pretty much the scenario that'll pan out?
You know, certainly unknown what would happen in terms of closing the nuclear power plants if they were to remain open. And I think we've discussed this in previous shows. You know, we've seen that the nuclear power plants have even been profitable. And also, Energy Harbor had the stock buybacks of up to $800 million to their shareholders. So, you know, when you look at it, you know, do they really need the money for the nuclear power plants to remain open? Certainly with the investigation, there's a lot more to come out, there has been talk of, they certainly would, some of the legislators have mentioned they would like to see the financials to see if it's really needed to keep the power plants open.
I gotcha. Yeah. This being a labor union show, and I know the unions, there's some good jobs over there. I hate to see them shut down altogether. Plus, the school systems, they're getting a lot of tax revenue as a result of that. So we'll definitely keep a close eye on that. Andrew, let's switch the dialogues here and talk about winter preparation. And energy usage typically goes up in the winter. Obviously, your furnace is operating more. There's people that probably should get new windows. There's a lot of things, insulation, I could go on. I know you've got some tips for consumers that you can run down. Go ahead.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'd kind of like to hit on some of the things that are less expensive. Certainly, as you mentioned, windows and insulation can make a big difference. But at the same time, you can end up spending thousands to ten thousands worth of dollars on those type of upgrades. So I want to kind of concentrate on some of the cheaper things you can do that can still make a difference in your home. Certainly, yesterday was a fairly breezy day here in Ohio with dropping temperatures. And certainly with the type of weather, you can start to feel it in your home that you want to make sure you keep it as energy efficient as possible and to keep those energy bills low. One thing we do recommend is check your furnace filter each month. I know that seems simple, but when you get a dirty furnace filter, the dirtier it is, the less energy that the furnace produces, hot air moving through. It gets blocked if your furnace filter is dirty. So look at your furnace filter. If it's dirty, replace it. If not, let it go for another 30 days and check it 30 days later. Also, it's important to have a furnace checkup by an HVAC company. Certainly that will allow your furnace to run more efficient, which will save you money on your energy bills. And also it can help allow your furnace to last longer. It's just like a car. The more tune-ups you have on your car, the longer it will run. And that applies also to furnaces. The other thing that we recommend is checking weather stripping around doors and windows. Those products do deteriorate over time. And as they deteriorate, it allows air to move, freely, between the door and the door jamb and, between the windows. And certainly replacing that can give you a nice seal to prevent that air movement. If you're not sure if you need it, one thing you can do is, if we have a breezy day like we had yesterday, if you just run your hands along the door jamb and feel any air coming through, then you need to replace the weather stripping. Also, if you have someone else in the household that could take a flashlight outside, if you can see light coming through, you have air movement. So that will certainly save money on your energy bill and also allow you to have a more comfortable home. They also make outlet and switch insulators, and you can purchase those at the hardware store or online, usually for under $5. But they go on the outlets on the interior walls of your home, inside your home, and they're easy to install, and because you do get quite a bit of air movement through your outlets. So that's another cheap and easy thing that you can do. And if you have older windows, and we talked that you could replace them, but certainly that is a pricey upgrade. Window insulation kits are another way to combat that without purchasing new windows. It's just plastic on the windows, and they install from the inside, and they do make a big difference, and it keeps that air from moving through. And certainly, and the nice thing about the new plastic is you can see through them. The ones I remember when I was a kid, you couldn't see through. It was thick, and there was no looking outside, but it did prevent the air movement. But these newer ones, it's very clear, and you can look outside, and you just take a blow dryer, and you can take out the creases out of it, so you get a nice-looking window. And finally, in terms of saving money, if you can set back your thermostat 5 to 10 degrees for up to 8 hours, you can save, 5 to 10% on your heating bill. If you do it at night when you're under the covers, that's a good time to do it. If you're not home during the day going to work, I know it's a little different this year as more people are working from home, but if you can reduce that while you're not at home, certainly that is another way to save on your energy bills.
Andrew, a lot of good tips there. I want to drive people to the website. It's occ.ohio.gov, occ.ohio.gov, or you can call toll-free 1-877-742-5622, 877-742-5622. Andrew Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council, you take care, be safe. We'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Yes, you have a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks, Flash.
You got it. All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow we have the OFT, the Ohio Federation of Teachers, and Policy Matters Ohio. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. find out more information online at labortools.com.